Ladies and gentlemen, let's begin. So last time I gave a long introduction, I said that, you know, this is the first time I'm talking about this subject. It's not the first time I think about this subject. I actually, from a long time ago, I have been an aficionado, and I think I read a few things, and I watch like almost everything that is there. My nights of insomnia, you can test me, because I have a interest in this subject. I never have spoken about it publicly ever, but I think that there is so much to be said if we get the proper context to say it. So that's why I'm so extremely careful. So last time I began by saying that if you are here to hear me talk about, you know, everyone's experience of abduction and what you have seen, etc., I am a little bit beyond that in the sense of I am completely aware of the sightings, of the Pentagon reports, and everything, like almost to the date. Okay. I have encountered resistance to talk about this, even within my family, because 99% of what you might find in internet or whatever it is probably garbage. So it's so easy to confuse this with conspiracy theories, etc. So my subject is going to be very narrow. My subject is going to be, does Judaism believe or considers the possibility of extraterrestrial life? Okay, is that clear? I'm going to talk about that. Now, probably in the last lecture, I'm going to be speaking a little more. And I also offer that at the end of this lecture, I'm open to every question that you have, every question. Okay, now I need to ask you to allow me to progress in the presentation. I mean, interruptions are okay, but only if it's essential. Not to add some things, unless it's at the end, okay? All right? So last time I show you some possibilities that in the Torah, extraterrestrial life might be a possibility, right? I'm going to continue with that, but today I'm going to show you a little more about what rabbis have said about it. Now, the biggest challenge here is to get rid of imagery that is already in our heads, okay? About what is extraterrestrial? You're thinking about ET, right? Or you're thinking about Area 51? You're thinking about Bob Lazar? Or you're thinking about the History Channel series, 16 seasons of ancient astronauts? Or NASA, sorry? Ancient astronauts, I think it's called
ancient aliens. It's called ancient aliens.
Okay, all right. So, or for example, the other series is NASA Unexplained Files, 13 or 14 seasons. I discovered one time that, you know, that you can see in different speeds. That was a great discovery. Also because that, excuse me? Right. There is a lot of fiction. There is some things that are, wow. After seeing all that, which, by the way, I have seen a lot and I never heard. I heard, of course, quoting certain biblical passages, especially Ezekiel, Yehezkel. But no one ever, and I challenge you to find it, quoted Maimonides. Did you ever see in any UFO presentation, even by rabbis, they never quote Maimonides. Another thing that they hardly quote, maybe here and there, but is what are really malachim, okay? What are angels? So the first question I have for you, and I would open the forum very briefly for 2 minutes, is what's your favorite extraterrestrial movie? What's your favorite movie, Hollywood movie, about extraterrestrials? Your favorite. When I say favorite, I don't mean entertainment. I mean, what is the most intelligent movie you have seen about extraterrestrial? I can't I know you can tell me a lot about silly movies, but what would be the most intelligent movie you have seen about extraterrestrial life? Excuse me? Close Encounter, Steven Spielberg? Close Encounter? Okay. What else? Have you watched Arrival, for example? Arrival, very intelligent movie. Very intelligent because it is also about language, it's also about time, it makes you think so much about different types of existence. Okay, so let me tell you what is my favorite movie, because you seem very quiet. My favorite movie ever is called Contact. It's a 1997 movie. So you say, what can a 1997 movie teach us so much about, you know, extraterrestrial? How can a movie in 1997 be intelligent? So let me tell you, Contact. Jodie Foster, yeah, 1997. I appreciate the movie, and you know, the more I see some scenes of that movie, the more I appreciate it. So let me tell you what I do appreciate about that movie. Well, the movie is about, you know, astrophysicist, that is this lady, and a message that gets from out of the world about building. I'm making it very brief. Building a machine, you know, information, building a machine that will allow contact with another civilization. So to make a very long story short, they build a machine, and Jodie Foster is elected after many things. By the way, there are some interesting dialogues that never appear again, in my opinion, in any other movies about this subject, between religious and non-religious people, which is fascinating by itself, in and by itself. Thank you so much. So, thank you. Got it. And the movie has more things that are really fascinating. For example, unlike any other movie, does it show you the extraterrestrial? Nothing. Doesn't show you anything. Okay? It shows you an encounter, but doesn't show you any shape or form of extraterrestrial. I'm going to tell you exactly what it does show you. Another thing that fascinates me about this movie is that at the end, when the astronaut goes out of space without any space suit or anything like that, goes out of space, from the outside, is seen as nothing happened, like the spaceship drop to the water or whatever it was there, and nothing happened. And then, after 1 minute for Earth, they open, you know, and she claims that she has been outside for 18 hours, and then they say, no, it's impossible. You have not been there for 18 hours, and they get a tape recorder. I think this is how the movie ends. And the tape recorder is all noise. There's nothing there of what she claims, but it's 18 hours. But that's only for the viewers, not for the discussion. Now, the core of the movie is the encounter with extraterrestrials. And I think this is very helpful, because it shows you something different and something that I can connect a little bit with the Jewish vision of extraterrestrial intelligences. Okay, so I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you one scene of this movie here, and I have. Of course, you are not going to see it, but I want you to listen to the dialogues. Let's see if I have the right connection. You cannot hear anything, obviously. Okay, 1 second, let's see. Oh, wait. Just give me a second. Ah, that's it. We are connected. All right, now, interesting, in the movie, she goes through wormholes, and she sees beautiful things, and beautiful galaxies, and stars, and experiences out of this world. And then she lands in the shore of something that looks like Pensacola, Florida. All right? And she lost her mom, she lost her father when she was very young. And now in that shore, she sees her father. She's her father. So she's completely, she's in this trip, okay? She's completely confused what's going on. So I'm going to tell you what it says. So she looks at her father and she says, "Dad," and she embraces him, and you know, and he tells her some beautiful words.
Do you want to find the script?
No, it's going to be very difficult.
I can say it out loud.
All right, so it's okay. Now, her father, you know, she says, "Where are you?" Etc. 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 And then she realizes, "But you are not real, right? You are not real." And he says, "That's right, but we thought that you will feel more comfortable if we communicate to you this way." Okay? So that's the whole point that I wanted to show you. That's it. You see, that's all. It's more dramatic when you listen.
It wasn't a real dad?
No, of course it wasn't a real.
And they recreated the image of the beach.
Right. So how would you call this experience that she had? Let's assume this for a second, right? They are communicating with her, but they are not communicating with her, you know, aliens, whatever, you know, but through that image of her dad. So I would say that the equivalent in the real biblical jargon will be nebuah. Right?
If you suffer from diabetes,
what is nebuah? What is nebuah? Nebuah is when you have a vision. Now, it's not a vision. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that's, you know what I mean? So what I want to explore together with you is the possibility that you know, many things in the Torah are nebuah. And we don't understand what nebuah is because we don't experience it. But by the way, I want to show you something that will make you really, really amazed, I think. How did Borei Olam reveal to Moshe Rabbeinu when he talked to him? Anochi Elohe Abicha. Okay? Bayomer, Anochi Elohe Abicha. I am the God of your father. So listen to Yalkut Shimoni. Nigla alav bekolo shel Amram Aviv. Borei Olam revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu with the sound of the voice of his father. Kede shelo ityare. So he won't be afraid. So he's communicated with him. The first nevuah with the voice of his father. All right? But it's a beautiful thing if you understand that there is no other way, especially for the first contact, because that will be the most comfortable way or accessible way to communicate, right? Now, also in terms of visualization, you cannot transmit in nebuah something that is beyond our understanding. And most of reality, as the Torah describes, is absolutely beyond our understanding. There is something that Maimonides called apophatic knowledge. Apophatic knowledge means when you realize that you cannot grasp whatever is beyond your understanding. And the only way to grasp that is to say, it's not this, it's not that. It's knowledge via negativa. So I'm going to give you three or four examples. You ready for this? You ready? Okay. Example number one. Imagine the simplest one that I can give you. Imagine that you are an ant, a little red ant, very, very, very small. Okay? And you live in your colony. For you, your ant colony is what?
The world.
Is the universe. Not just the world, the entire universe. Your reality is contained in that colony. You never saw the colony itself from outside, right? Not even that. Do you know anything of what's going on outside that colony? Can you perceive anything? You can't. So how much you know about The real reality. If you're an ant inside the colony, how much? Nothing. No, okay, right. Let's go out of the colony right now. You are an ant, and there is a man next to you. Can you see him? Can your physically, can your visual field see that man? If you are an ant, and you have even the proportionally the size that you have as a human being right now, but as an ant, as small as an ant, can you see a person? You cannot see a person. Your visual field is not wide enough. Okay, so to see a whole person, the only thing you can see, if I am there, will be a small part of the sole of my shoe. That's everything you will see of me. All right? And now you see something black. You didn't even know that this is black because you don't even know what colors are. So how would you identify that? That small black thing that you see. Well, if you're an ant, probably you will say, oh, maybe the enemy is coming, because you might think that this is a huge black ant, which is something that maybe you know. Right? Now, that's all you can know about the man that is there. You can never, ever figure it out or see the shoe. Even if you see the shoe, you won't know what you are seeing. You will never extrapolate from this much, this centimeter of the sole, which is everything you can see, the entire shoe, a leg, and let alone a human being. Even if you were capable of seeing a human being, what can you understand about a human being? Anything?
No.
Nothing. You cannot know nothing about a human being. Did I make myself the point clear? Now, this is the question, ladies and gentlemen. What is the difference between the ant and us? Is something we can calculate in the millions or billions? I don't know, not billions, but probably a human being is how many millions times bigger than the ant? Just give me whatever number you want. 100 million times? 1,000 million or 1,000? Okay, 10,000. Yeah, I think you're right. 1,000, maybe 50,000, maybe 100, just a million times bigger. Okay. Now, how many times bigger is the Earth compared to us? Just the Earth, just our small planet. How many times? 10,000? 1 million? Much more. Now, if you are here, you know what the solar system is. If you are here, you know what the galaxy is. If you are here, you know what the known universe is. So, isn't the possibility that all what we are seeing is nothing, right? Is it the possibility that we are seeing is a very small part of? Of course, it's not that the ant know that this is part of a sole of a shoe. So it's not that the ant knows 0.1% of reality. It's so confused that what it knows is under zero, below zero. It's not part of the reality. It's not part of the truth. It confuses because all what the ant can perceive and process is in terms of ants. Now, we are in the same boat as the ant. All what we can perceive is things that we can associate to, we can understand, reflect into our in our world. So if Malachim revealed to us, or Borei Olam revealed to us something, or we see something that is revealed to us, we probably will see it in human or some form of accessible to humans, even though that might not be human. You understand what I'm saying? All right. Now I give you another example, and with this, what I'm trying to show you is that I think that the main problem with science, that is, I think it's a little bit lame in that, lame or lamb, is it lame? Lame in that aspect, is that it can only talk about the universe, even though the universe is extraordinarily, you cannot even fathom it, but that's the whole reality they know. But we in Judaism, we know better. For example, we all believe, and this is not something Machloket, okay? We all believe in immortality of the soul, right? Do we? So where is that soul? Is in the in this world? I don't want to go right now. What do they do? What do they know? It connection between here and there. My only point is right now, do these souls exist? What is the unambiguous answer of Judaism? Yes or no?
Yes.
Is that terrestrial? No. Is it accessible to us? Is it? Is it accessible to us? No. Okay. And again, another example I can give you. By the way, there was a philosopher, Spanish philosopher, called Ortega y Gasset. He developed a philosophy called perspectivism. So what is perspectivism? He says, he asserted something that we can all prove. You never saw an orange. Never. Have you ever seen an orange? No, you haven't. And he says, let me prove it to you. When you see here an orange, you are seeing this part of the orange, then you see this part of the orange, then you see this part, then you see this part, then you see this part. It is your mind that puts them all together and allows you to see an orange. Your sight, our sight is so limited that we cannot see the real orange in 3D, never. You cannot see it. You put it together. So we are even limited in the daily things that we do every day. Okay? Obviously, this is the simplest thing. A little more sophisticated is the following example that I mentioned in different contexts. When you are a baby in your mother's womb, the only thing you know is your mother's womb, without you knowing that this is your mother's womb. What knowledge do you have? You are intelligent. You have some intelligence. What knowledge do you have of the world beyond your mother's womb?
None.
Nothing. Zero. Absolutely zero. If you could talk, if you have a twin brother or sister there, and you could talk, you can communicate, and you will discuss what will happen once you are not here anymore. How can you imagine the world to come? How can you imagine it?
Yes.
Can you imagine anything of what you are seeing here? Anything. Light, people, faces. You never saw a face. You never saw your foot. You never saw it. Your eyes are closed. Right? The only thing that functions for you actively is your hearing. Now, your universe is made of noises. Darkness, you don't even know that it's dark because you can only realize that it's dark when you see light, right? And you don't know colors, you don't know people, you don't know voices, you don't know anything. You have a mind, but your mind is completely constrained by what envelops you. Okay, that's the universe. So, in a sense, our Torah teaches us that we are in the virtual womb of this small physical universe that we think that is so huge. Imagine, understand that. I hope I'm not going too far. Understand that if Borei Olam is infinite, as we believe, there is no big enough universe. For scientists, yes. But not for Borei Olam. Nothing is big enough if Borei Olam is infinite. If we're talking about the infinite, then it doesn't matter. It's not size, does not matter. So it's not about how small is planet Earth. It's how significant is planet Earth and its life. Okay? Scientists, because they take Borei Olam out of the picture, they're facing that reality, which is the same reality of a baby inside his mother's womb. That's why science is so lame. It's so undeveloped. Okay? And of course you cannot expect the Torah to tell us truths about other dimensions. More than planets, is dimensions. Because we cannot grasp it. we, as humans, when I say us, I'm saying about humans, we cannot grasp it. Even if you have information, last time I told about Esh, right? About that the only way to, that someone, forget about the Torah, someone could possibly describe light that is not coming from the sun 3,000 years ago is by saying Esh, by saying fire, okay? Imagine if you would have a cell phone, you would find a cell phone 3,000 years ago, okay? How would you describe it? How would you describe it? What word would you use for cell phone? Tell me. If you find a cell phone 3,000 years ago, what would you say?
A box that makes its own sound.
Network.
Box. Yeah, bricks. You know, everything you said will be wrong. Anything you said will be wrong. You cannot, even if you have something in front of you, you don't have the words to define that. So what I'm trying to say, oh, one more thing. Flatland, did you watch the small clip I sent you? So I sent you a small clip with Flatland, which to me was like, I owe to Flatland the possibility to understand Harambam, which I'm going to read for you in a second. Flatland is a book written by Edwin Abbott that talks about, did I describe to you the story? It's a world of two dimensions, two-dimensional world. That world is like length and width.
Yes.
Length and width. That's it. Length and width. So all the beings of that world, they interact together, the triangle with the circle, with the square, they all interact and live together happily. All right. Now, the problem or the script begins, or the main part begins. Sorry. When a sphere, which is not bidimensional but three-dimensional, a sphere comes to the world of the two-dimensional people. Okay. Now, can a sphere know about and understand and have access to the world of two dimensions?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. What about the other way?
No.
What happens when you, from the two dimensions,
yes, sir.
Right? If from the two dimensions you see a sphere as a circle, you can only see it in the way that. Excellent. Only a circle. You can never see a sphere because you are completely limited to perceive a sphere. Now, if you watch that small 5 minutes video, you will see that when the square is looking at the sphere, it doesn't even see a circle. It sees different angles, like one point here, one point there, of things that it cannot explain. And when it tried to share this with the triangle and with the and with the circle and with the other beings, the how you say trapezio, okay, whatever, the other shapes, they said, have you drink something? I mean, were you drinking when you are then the influence? What are you talking about? And then it shows you the other possibilities, like seeing different levels, or not levels, layers, like an onion, different layers of that sphere, as Kevin said, maybe circles. That's all you can grasp, not more than that. Now my question to you, what's the difference in terms of dimensions between us and Borei Olam? Is it like we're in the second dimension and he is in a third dimension?
Outside of reality.
I mean, if it's infinite. So what can we grasp? I mean, it's very arrogant. You see, this is part of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah means what? Avodah Zarah means that I deny, I'm using the words very carefully, I'm deny the possibility of not knowing what is Borei Olam. Avodah Zarah is everything but apophatic knowledge. Harambam says, am I going too far? Harambam says, everything that can be said about Borei Olam is via negativa. You cannot say anything in a positive way as if you know. Only repeating Rahum, Hanun, Ela Gadol, Gibor, Benara, because it is quoted, but not because we understand. So Harambam says, you will know more about Borei Olam if you say, he does not have a body. Okay, now, how can I figure out something that he does not have a body? Now, if you are children, when my children, not Ela, but Yaakov, I remember, I tried to explain to him, you know, he asked me, Borei Olam does have a body? Maybe he was 4 or 5 years old. And I say, no. He says, does Borei Olam has arms? I said, no. Does he have legs? No. Does he have a nose? No. Poor Borei Olam. Like, you know, because he imagines somebody without, you know, imagines a body. But now, when you, the more you can disconnect Borei Olam from everything you know, the more you know about Borei Olam. And vice versa. The more you project your human concept into Borei Olam, or for the sake of this conversation, with the extra terrestrial or dimensional world realm, okay, the more you know, and vice versa. Make sense? Therefore, this tells me that what scientists do is a disservice to knowledge. I don't want to say disservice to science, but it's a disservice to knowledge, or to wisdom, to real wisdom.
Quantum physics does.
Yeah, a little bit, but even quantum physics and the indeterminability principle, how you say,
right.
The principle of indeterminability,
right.
Heisenberg, so even that is within the physical realm. Even that is within the flat land. Even this is within the... So we have a lot of things that we don't understand. And we got to say, we don't understand how the electron could be at the same time in two places. It hints to something, but...
We have to use three-dimensional examples because we can't perceive the fourth.
Right. So again, the more humble you are, the more right you are. You and vice versa, you understand? All right. So let me go to some things that Harambam says. I think I gave you a few examples, right, about how difficult it is for us to perceive. Now, I read this for you. All what Harambam can say about Malachim. Now again, you must get rid of the Christian image of Malachim. If I say angels, and you think about Cupid, then it's not for you. This is not for you because you're going to laugh, you're going to mock. Rabbi, I wanted to know about the sites in the Nimitz in 2014 and here, and I saw, and I did this. And I know the testimonies, and, you know, I heard. I acknowledge those testimonies. I'm just trying to think for myself. I don't know the truth. I don't know. But my contribution to you is, maybe we know less than what we think we know. That's my contribution. Okay. With that said, let me read for you what Malachim are. Now, Harambam does not describe almost anything about Malachim. The only thing he said, first of all, they exist, right? And he mentions 10 categories of Malachim that all of them somehow had some protagonism in the Mikra. In the Tanakh. Now, part of the question I will not be able to answer you is, were those real encounters, or was that Nebuah? But Nebuah, you cannot think of it as just a vision. Nebuah is is like a sort of reality of that movie that I couldn't show you. That something is happening, but is shown to you in a way that is accessible for you. That's the only thing. It's like you go back to the mom's womb. You talk to the aunt in the aunt language, in the aunt world. Cannot talk to the aunt. It's impossible for the aunt to understand anything, to understand what words are. Can you? Can the aunt understand what a word is, what a thought is? So imagine how many things are there. If the difference between the aunt and us is so small, and between us and the known physical universe that is so small compared to Borei Olam, is so huge. So you see how small we are. There's one Spanish philosopher, he was Jewish, from Jewish ascendance. His name was Francisco Sanchez, okay? And he wrote a book that says everything.
Doesn't sound Jewish.
Quid nihil scitur, in Latin, that nothing is known, que nada se sabe, all right? He wrote it originally in Spanish. And it's so true. He denies the possibility of knowledge. That doesn't mean that we don't have to look for it, but we have to be very humble. Sorry. If God exists, if he doesn't exist, then yeah, all what it is the physical knowledge, and okay, so science is right, whatever, by whatever you see. If Borei Olam exists, which is the first principle of Judaism, then we live in a small bubble, very, very small, very meaningful, but very small. So, do we know if there is life in other planets, microbial life? I don't know. That's not relevant for me. Now, is there existence? I don't want to call it even life. Like, I don't want to call it life in the sense of a living organism. But if there is anything that exists outside this dimension, what will be the answer of Judaism? Yes. Aramban mentions 10. Different levels. Doesn't give you any image. But can I read for you some of these six or cases that you know where it starts? Then the difference is between ma'alatam is how much they grasp, how much intelligence, what we say, they have, consciousness, they have. What type of consciousness? Superior to humans, alright? And what is the main difference between malachim? I have to say this before I continue. What is the main difference between malachim and humans? They might be more intelligent than us, right? Okay, what will be the main difference between malachim and humans?
They're lower than a human.
The what?
They're level lower than human beings.
That's right. There is one level that they are lower than human beings. No free will.
Nobody,
but that could be a higher level. Now, no free will. How do you say in English, malach? I know, angel. Okay, the word angel comes from angelus, which is the same thing. Shaliach. What?
Messenger,
proxy. It's somebody that does Borei Olam's will, doesn't have the free will to choose. Somebody asked me last time, and I didn't have an answer. Somebody that was sitting there asked me, do we believe that angels have a Torah? I don't remember what I answered, but I don't think I was satisfied with that answer. Then I thought about it. I said, wow, but there is a Midrash that talks about this.
Yeah.
When Borei Olam wants to give the Torah, so the Malachim says, hey, why are you giving the Torah to them? I said, you don't need the Torah. and because you don't have parents, but bottom line, what this telling is, you don't have Bechira Chofshit. You cannot choose between right and wrong. You are, in a sense, the world is not good, like robots, right? You do the Shlichut of Borei Olam. In that way, we are superior. So you understand how supernatural is freedom of choice. And this is what makes us human. Okay? Now let me go back to the Malachim. So the first one is Hayota Kodesh. Alright? What is Hayota Kodesh? And Baruch Hashem, I know Hebrew. So I'm going to challenge you. What is Chayot HaKodesh? What is Chayot HaKodesh in Hebrew? Okay. What is Chayot in Hebrew? Animals, right? You will see animals. But this is the way that the Torah talks about existing creatures. Chayot HaKodesh. And what is Kodesh? Something separate from us, inaccessible to us. Chayot HaKodesh, which is another name for Malachim, is those beings that exist. They exist, not in with the shape of humans, in intelligence without body. I don't want to use the word spirituality because it has different meanings. And they are inaccessible to us. Makes sense? It's more than saying sacred animals. You say sacred. Chayot HaKodesh is sacred animals. Probably many translations we have that are sacred animals or sacred beings. Okay, the existence they have an existence. Now, can you understand that existence? Can you? Just think about the baby, or Flatland, or any other example, or even the silly example of the ant. You can't. You try. Even if when you try, you fail. You fail. So let me read for you what Rambam says. Em lemala min hakol, the Chayot HaKodesh, they are above everything else. Then Ofanim, the Ofanim Chayot HaKodesh, so a different one level down. Then, for example, let me see. The Hashmalim are those who Yecheskel saw. Hashmalim are Chayot Esh. Translate for me. Beings of fire or
light.
Thank you. All right. Seraphim. Seraphim comes from Lisrof, which is also burning, which is also something associated with light or luminescence. Could be, right? Malachim, for example, he quotes here the Malach that found Hagar and saved Hagar, all right? Or the word Elohim also defines another level, inferior. This is the one that fought with Yaakov Avinu. Kisalitem Elohim emanashim batuchal. Or Bene Elohim, those are the ones that, in a metaphoric way, discuss with God about Yov, all right? Or Kerubim, that they are in the Gan Eden, that in a metaphoric way they are avoiding the access that we might have to a different dimension that we call Gan Eden. That is probably not what's the name of this park here? The park in Reading. It's not the... What's the name of the park in Reading?
Memorial
Field? No, the park. Beautiful park. Stepping Stone. It's not Stepping Stone Park. It's not Gan Eden. That's a different dimension probably, right? Makes sense? We say, Nishmato began Eden. We're not talking about a place, a terrenal place in Hawaii or something like that. Like Kings Point. And then Cherubim. And then the last one is called Ishim. Ishim. What is Ishim? Like what? What is Ishim? What does Ish mean? Yeah, you're so scared of participating. Why? What is Ish? No, seriously, what is Ish? Man, human. Okay. Ishim?
People?
Maybe, yeah. Okay, all right, Ishim. Now, I don't know if I'm right, but could I try humanoids? Could I try humanoids? I mean, would that be within the scope, the semantic field of Ishim? Probably yes. From my knowledge of Hebrew, yeah, probably. It's a malach. So how the Ishim are defined? Let's see, because this is the lowest level. The one is the one that the prophets can have access to. The lowest level. This is the only one. Okay? So, let me read for you. Of course, and nobody can. No, none of these 10 different, let me call it, dimensions of malachim or dimensions of beings, can have access to Borolam. Borolam is beyond all of them. But don't you dare to think in a physical way. Don't you dare to think in a physical hierarchy. Don't you dare to think about planets right now. We are ants that have to figure out something beyond the colony. It's impossible. We are ants trying to figure out something. We are babies trying to figure out how is the world outside the womb. When all what we have access to is noises. And we don't even know that we are in total dark. So this is what Rambam says, which is not a lot. Umala asirit, and the tenth level, imala tatsura shenikret ishim, is this form, but no, it's not form. It's form without body, which is a different dimension. All right, kol ishim, them are malachim, and they are the angels. Amedabrim imaneviim, that they communicate with the neviim, as it happened so many times with Daniel, with this, with that, with Moshe Rabbeinu, with Abraham Avinu, right? With everyone. This is how Borei Olam reveals to them. Or for example, Vayere veine ish echad labush vadim beraiti ani Daniel levadi et amare. For example, Daniel is there and he sees something. Marea nevoa. Not necessarily a person, not a person, not even a physical humanoid. It might be a nevoa, it might be the same similar thing to contact, okay? But he was the only one that saw that. You understand what I'm saying? But not because it happened in his brain like a vision of somebody who is drunk. Okay. That is a reality that suddenly he had access to. All right? So so it says, "Bema alat asura shiliket ishim, bema malachim shemedabrim imanevim." Let me listen carefully. "Venirim laem bemar'e hanevuah," and they show themselves, they reveal themselves to the prophet in prophetic visions. "Lefichach nikreu ishim," that is why they are called ishim. Shema'alatam keroba mima'alat da'at ha'adam, because they are the closest to human beings. Right? Now, I think I'm going to stop here. And I'm going to give you time for questions. I know that I might not be telling you what exactly happened with the Nimitz. I know that. I know. Okay? What did you see, Rabbi? What about the triangle, UFO, this, the satellites, this, that? Look, let me tell you one more thing. We are a little bit, imagine if we are a little bit like a caveman with a cell phone. We don't know what to do with it. There is something that takes my sleep away, and I'm going to share it with you. Before I say that, look, for Borei Olam, there is no quantity. Right? How many sperms are conception, thank you. How many sperms get to the egg at the moment of conception? How many?
One.
Usually one. Okay. And how many sperms are there? Hundreds of millions, I think. 500 million, maybe? Imagine 500 million. Okay. Why? Why if all you need is one? Did you ever think about that? So it seems like a pattern. Because you think like the movie Contact, the Drake equation, I think it's called. Is how in the, why we have such a incredible big world, what a waste, right? If there are so many billions and billions, I mean, they do a very, I don't want to say stupid, I don't want to sound disrespectful, but from my perspective, it is. They do this silly, lame equation of, oh, how many planets? Blah, blah, blah. So we know that 10 to the 40 planets, exoplanets, blah, 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 blah. Then, therefore, has to be life. I'm going to speak about this in the last class, if you come, if you still come. But that's all why I got there. Ah, if you see a pattern of Borei Olam, size or quantity doesn't count. It's just one. He could have created the world. Why there is so much variety of animals, of plants, of people? All right? Why? Why? If it's only one planet, why? Yeah, there is a great book. It's called The Entropic Principle that says that all these planets are justified because you need all these planets for their carbon to emit, to create, to make life appear by coincidence. That's nonsense. So I see a pattern of Borei Olam where, since it's infinite, size doesn't matter, quantity doesn't matter, it's just one. Meaning matters. We are very important. Don't get deceived and think that because we are so small, like I said, we are an ant, then we are very insignificant. The opposite. We might be physically insignificant, but our thoughts, what allows us to choose and to connect with Borei Olam, it's a miracle. I mean, and what I told you, that it takes my sleep away, really takes my sleep away, is this. I love science. I love science. And I'm amazed at this world. And I think that every time we discover something like the incredible world of the DNA, or I read a book that brought, every book I read about science is, brings my emuna like up. When you read the body, just the body, you will never find there the word God. But ironically, you will find the word miracle, like, I don't know, 20, 30 times. Isn't that telling you something? Or you read six numbers. Anybody read six numbers? The six numbers that coordinate all the physics of the known universe. They're so precise. Like you have like 10, 15 decimals after each number. And if one of these numbers goes off in the four laws of physics and gravity, one of these decimals goes off, the universe cannot exist. So you believe in Borei Olam. Or read the book, The Privileged Planet. Read The Privileged Planet. You will see how incredibly, perfectly fine-tuned is this world. Now, what have scientists done with all these things that shows us the existence of Borei Olam? What they do with that? What does David Attenborough do when he presents in the most beautiful thing, the blue planet, or these, all these beautiful things that you see, Maramoma Secha Hashem, that idiot says, evolution. They know that is fake. So with all this incredible information about God, they're denying God. You see what I mean? It's like, oh, this demonstrates that God doesn't exist because now we understand, therefore we don't need to justify and say God. The opposite. It says that in the time of the Mashiach, the world will be filled of knowledge of Borei Olam like the waters cover the ocean. And that knowledge is here. Just that they're purposely disconnect the dots for political reasons. That takes my sleep away. That takes my sleep away because I say, wow, look, all our children are studying about God, but they don't know. They study about God. All right. I didn't finish, but I'm going to stop here and make room for questions. Okay?
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
No, according to this Rambam. That means everything in the Torah is a vision, like the three angels came to the tent with the
according to a Rambam, Lord. Maybe yes, I don't know. But the question is, what is a vision? What is a vision? It's a vision. Imagine just for, how you say, for argument's sake. Imagine that a vision is you accessing a different dimension. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not a vision here. It's a different reality of existence.
So this Jodie Foster was getting in a war?
No, I didn't say it. Wait a minute. I'm showing you something that will allow you to understand better what the war could be.
Yes. Like an example would be like a radio transmitter. There's music all around us, but if we have to create a vessel to receive that,
right,
tap into the, let's call it a created entity such as,
very good, yes,
such as like Hashgacha, which God created in the world, we could tap into that frequency if we, you know, align ourselves properly. But that's but I think from what I understand, the Rambam is he explains that it's angels are either forces of nature or visions, and it's not, or people, right?
No, well, I don't know. I read you what Rambam says. You take your conclusions. Again, you connect the dots. I'm giving you some information that I don't think I didn't read. I'm not telling you a class of a book that I read. Like when I read from, you know, I repeat it. I gather information, you know, during my lifetime about this. I never spoke about it. I always thought about it.
I wanted to say actually that, because you brought it up just before, the most famous atheist in the world is Richard Dawkins. Before him, probably the most published atheist was Anthony Flew. And Anthony Flew, at his old age, actually had to admit that there is a God. Why? Because of the sheer complexity of DNA, right? He said it's clearly a designer. And Richard Dawkins actually admitted in an interview that there's evidence for a design in DNA. There absolutely is. And he says it must be, he says this, this is a recording, you can watch this on YouTube. He says it must be that evolution, some type of evolutionary process, was actually started by an intelligent race that is greater than ours.
Right, I'm going to speak about that next time. This is the only thing that is missing. I mean, not the only thing, this is one big chunk of information that is missing, is where is science looking at, and why, and why it might be a little bit confusing. Yes.
I have a lot to say that connects the things that you were talking about tonight. I was taking notes. So in my mind, I always think of like neshama as connected as an attachment to Hashem and our neshama. And I was thinking about when you talked about the different planes of existence in Flatland,
right,
that the sphere has access to the
right,
flat plane,
yes,
but not the other way around.
Right.
So I feel, I don't know if this is something that's part of Torah or not, but in my personal relationships with people, I feel like the neshamas of the people that have passed on still have access to us, because they, you know, assuming they still exist, those neshama, that they can access our plane, that they can see, like our ancestors, that they can not see with vision, but that they can know of what's happening in our lives, and that sometimes they can access us through our dreams. Because I know people personally
have had
visitation.
I think
of it also as what you were saying about the malachim, whether it's a vision or real, it could be both. It could be that
exactly. It could be.
It is the nevuah is real, but it's real in the form of a vision.
Right. Of
now, similar to what you were saying about Jodie Foster.
No. There is. You didn't. You are very. You are very, 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 very patient with me, and I appreciate that. And you are not asking me about the actual UFOs, what I think about the sightings.
Mm-hmm.
You are very, very respectful on that. So I heard so many things. Now, from all what I heard, the one that caught my attention was the one that Jacques Vallée, as I told you, V-A-L-L-E-E, only because he seems to be thinking out of the box. And to my knowledge, he's the only one that says, hey, don't think about exoplanets. Think about the different dimension. And he's not a religious guy. I don't think he's a religious guy. So he might be saying, well, it might come from the future, whatever it is. But he's not thinking like everybody else. Let's look for planets within the habitable zone in the universe, etc. That doesn't... I will show you next time how science contradicts itself when they look for life there. And for us, doesn't have any relevance if there are microbes in Mars or not. That doesn't contradict anything the Torah says, that nothing affirms. The Torah, as per Haramban, the Torah talks about other dimensions, not other planets. That's the main difference. And you were, as I said, gentle enough not to ask me about the UFOs. I don't know how to connect them. That's the truth. I'm less skeptical because I have heard so many testimonies about people that have seen these things. Now, the only thing I assure to myself is that this is not beyond Borei Olam's control. This is Malachim. This is some Malachim in the sense of they know of Borei Olam's existence. Now, how they reveal to us, are we seeing what we think we are seeing? That's part of the question here, yes.
So I wanted to also mention another intelligent movie that people should watch. It's called a movie called Interstellar. And it talks about accessing another dimension outside of the third dimension. And he kind of sees existence through a tesseract, which is like the fourth dimensional world. And since time is linear in a three-dimensional world, he can kind of float between times.
Right.
So he's interdimensional at that point.
Right.
So that's kind of how we can understand. But I think one other thing I wanted to kind of address, and I think it's a very common mistake that people make, and it's not anybody's fault, but people usually perceive the soul as a piece of God, and that's actually what the rabbi was saying, is that God, we use physical explanations of God because of the lack of language, and even the Torah says, you know, like God blew breath into humanity and everything like that, but really, we're not on the same spectrum as God.
Right.
So actually, we're not a piece of God.
Right.
So we're a created entity just like anything else, like an angel.
You see why extraterrestrial life is so fascinating, because it has to do with creation, with Borei Olam, with us, with Neshama, with afterlife. So many things that they all touch with each other. Any more questions, or we call it
yes.
A day? Oh, yes, sorry.
His dad's, your dad's on the UFO, by the way.
Yes, I'm very aware.
I told him what you said. I told him. I called him the next day, and I said.
I saw him too, but it wasn't like what he saw. So.
Okay.
So I
think Mrs. Asson was, I'm sorry, I'm going to you in a second.
Can I just say something? And Torah, we go to science, they say start with Big Bang and you get next to
right.
But nothing comes from nothing.
Exactly.
So it has to
yes.
be something that generates this Big Bang.
Right. They never have the ultimate answer
cannot.
For
they
everything.
Start from being well enough.
Right. Right. They are limited, very limited. They think religion is limited.
Convenient theories.
Yes, exactly.
The more they see how much more there is and how little the
more we know.
Unless you recognize that you are an ant in the ant colonies, you cannot see beyond that. Mr. Rajiv is going to be the last question of tonight.
The founder of Chabad movements, Rabbi Shneur Zalman Bialik,
right.
His book Tanya, he quotes Zohar that supports theory of evolution, but say that from out of nothing, from little dots,
right.
God created the whole universe.
Right, yeah.
You heard?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes,
and,
yes.
And the second question, what if, did you heard about this show in Netflix called Squid Game? Or
what does that have to do?
It's a very sadistic...
It's about extraterrestrials?
No.
Ah, okay.
It's mind-boggling why the whole world is... is fascinated. I mean,
right. Yeah. Yeah, you know what, Mr. Rajiva, you allow me to make the following last line of tonight, okay? So we don't need to be looking desperately for extraterrestrial intelligence. We have to look desperately for terrestrial intelligence. That's very difficult to find. Thank you so much, everyone.